These players are getting hungrier, more aggressive, but the size of the systems they target is less predictable because they're making both small and large acquisitions with a focus on really capitalizing on the opportunities available to grow and expand their businesses.
I am Reese Tisdale, and this is Future of Water, which we talk about all the ways which companies, utilities, and people are addressing the challenges and opportunities in water. This is episode 61, and it's a good one. I'm joined today by my colleagues, Charlie Seuss and Isabel Kesman, both analysts for Bluefield Research. And they're going to talk about the role of private participation in water, utility M&A, and more broadly, competitive trends, basically how companies are approaching water and wastewater markets in the U.S. from an ownership and acquisition perspective. While we track the market quarterly, deal by deal, state by state, Isabel and Charlie, they actually really dig into this as much as anyone. So they presented some of these findings actually to some clients recently, but also to our team. And I'll admit it, I thought it was really interesting. I see this all the time, but sometimes you lose sight of the forest for the trees. So rather than hear me talk about it, I thought I'd bring them on and let them share some of their insight. So with that being said, let's bring Charlie and Isabel into the conversation.
All right. So I'm joined here by Isabel Kesman and Charlie Seuss. Isabel, how's it going?
Doing well. You?
Things are good. Where are you these days?
I'm in the Boston office.
Ah, that was a trick question. So everybody's scattered about. So, but who's not in the Boston office is Charlie. Where are you? You're in Cambridge, I assume. Somerville?
Yeah, I'm up in Medford and excited to make my podcast debut.
Yeah, I think as jokingly, Jaime Colon, who works with us, he was, what did he say? First time listener, first time podcaster, something to that effect. All right. So, well, let's just jump to it. Recently, you guys have been putting together, I mean, you guys are seemingly always doing this, but working on private participation in water, particularly in the U.S. more recently. And I know that you guys put together a presentation. Not only did you share a lot of that information with our colleagues internally, but also, you know, we've been talking to clients as well about some larger or sort of broader trends in private participation or private water, as we call it, in the U.S. among investor-owned utilities and such. But before we jump into the details of the M&A and the competitive strategies, I was hoping one of you, and maybe Isabel, I'll start with you. I mean, the foundation to any conversation about private water is really understanding about the U.S. water, wastewater landscape among utilities, how fragmented it is. Isabel, can you at least lay it out, generally speaking?
Yeah, absolutely. So the U.S. water and wastewater landscape is highly fragmented. And by this, we mean there's, you know, 50,000 community water systems and about 20,000 wastewater facilities or systems. And the majority of these systems are very small or small systems. And generally speaking, this has been a challenge for the sector because small systems often face financial, managerial, technical barriers that make capital investments in infrastructure a challenge to the ownership, and also a potential fuel for divestment. And I guess another thing to note is that when we talk about these systems, we at Bluefield, we talk about it usually in terms of the population served and also the number of systems. And so when we look on an organizational level, there's a pretty even split in ownership between in the number of systems between municipal owners and private owners. 52% of water systems are municipally owned and 68-ish% of wastewater systems are municipally owned. But then when we look at it in terms of population, we start seeing that these municipal systems serve the majority, close to 85-86% of water and wastewater populations. And so that's where we see a growing opportunity for the private sector.
Yeah, so I think that's a clear way of looking at it. When you measure by population, you get a different split, obviously, than when you look at it sort of on nominally based systems, which I think is a good point. I think, you know, your point about the smaller systems being under greater stress, they just don't have the capital. They don't have the resources, like you said. I mean, I think I brought this up before, and this came from by way of Eric Bendler, who we work with. We were talking about, you know, was 75% of systems in the U.S., number of systems have less than three employees, right? And so, you know, from a private ownership perspective, I mean, obviously that's where a lot of the M&A is happening. A big opportunity is there for these small systems. I think it maybe goes without saying, but, you know, it's still difficult to scale because you have to go system to system to system, whether it be for 300 people or whether it be for 3,000 or 30,000. There's still due diligence. There's still business development and deal origination that has to happen, which takes time and resources and is not always easy. But rather than go on with that, I think one of the questions I would, I guess my follow-up question to you, Isabel, is where do investor-owned utilities or IOUs fit into this mix? You know, so that's a big focus of ours. You know, what share do they make up of the market?
Yeah, so we estimate that between 6 to 7% of the drinking water population served through these centralized systems belong to a leading investor-owned utility. And that's kind of what Charlie and I work on a daily basis, is we're following the activity of about 24 top investor-owned utilities. Where are they making deals? Where are they expanding? Market entry, rate cases, strategies for acquisitions, cost approaches, all that. That's what we're really interested in the private water service. And it's been pretty exciting just because there's been a lot of shakeup between IOUs, mergers, new players. So it's been interesting to follow.
Okay. So, all right. So you mentioned about 24 companies or so that are sort of leaders or active in the market at varying levels. So why don't we sort of dive in to those companies? And this is a good chance to bring you and Charlie into the conversation. So who is on the leaderboard? What does it look like when we think about companies?
Yeah. So to build off what Isabel was saying, we have constructed and are continuously updating an IOU leaderboard based on the total number of connections held by these top IOUs. At the top, by a large lead, is American Water with about 3.5 million connections, which is practically double the number of connections of the closest competitor, Essential Utilities, who has about 1.3 million connections across 8 states.
Now, to interrupt for a second, I mean, American Water, that's kind of like the elephant in the room, right? Everybody looks at IOUs in the U.S. And even globally, I mean, they're a significant player when we look at private water utility ownership globally. I know that obviously there are systems in places like Brazil that are privately owned by large players. But in the U.S., American is it and have a real advantage. So sorry to cut you off there, but.
No, yeah. I mean, they're definitely one of the players we're tracking. But, you know, there's a lot of interesting activity that we're watching, you know, as you move down that list of IOUs. Following Essential is Veolia, who recently entered the regulated utility market space through its merger with Suez, which brought in about 675,000 connections on top of that base. Cal Water is another. They are at number 4, I think, with about 556,000 connections, although with this recent merger between Corex and Southwest, that places them pretty close behind with about 514,000 connections right on the heels of Cal Water.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's interesting, like the Veolia piece is interesting in many respects. One, because obviously we look at them globally through other services and just their activities, and historically or more recently, prior to their acquisition of Suez, they've been sort of what we would say, they've taken an asset light strategy, really focused more, you know, a lean towards industrial positions, but also towards services and O&M, right? They're a leading O&M player in the U.S. as well. I think Isabel could speak to that, but also it'll be interesting to see how their strategy unfolds in the U.S. now that they have a regulated position again. That being said, they do have what I would say the equivalent of regulated positions in places like France, where they have, you know, long-term concessions and are running for long extended periods of time, utilities and other markets. But the U.S. one is a little bit unique compared to others. So, well, what about other M&A, just at least as far as what's happening on the tail end of that leaderboard? Any other final comments on that, Charlie?
Yeah. I mean, in addition to those larger mergers, which we're definitely going to be keeping a close eye on next year, but there's been a lot of interesting and pretty aggressive market activity by some of the key players that that we're watching, including Central States, NW Natural, and NextEra, who really have kind of flipped the leaderboard on its head over the past couple of years, between new market entry and a wave of acquisitions.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, I don't know, have they flipped the leaderboard or have they posed potential disruption down the road? That's the way I see it.
I think that the Corex Southwest merger and also Veolia joining the leaderboard is the flip, but also Central States, like they've definitely moved up over the last 2 years, at least 100,000 connections added, probably more, working on getting that exact number. But yeah, there's been changes, but then NW Natural, just 25,000 connections. Is that right, Charlie? The Far West, like that's a huge acquisition that can bump you up on that board, especially when you get closer to the tail end where you're looking at, 50,000 connections.
I think you're right. And I think what's interesting, I mean, you mentioned the NW Natural acquisition and it's called Far West. It happened in Arizona. You said 25,000 connections added. It'll be interesting to see, right, where new market players get into the business, so to speak. And, you know, it's hard to do, right? As someone actually at Aqua American or Essential at one point told me, this is, 5-10 years ago, they said, if you want to get in sooner or later, you just have to jump into the pool and start swimming, right? Bad pun, but truth be told, that's kind of the way it is. So once you have an established position of whatever size, I think it makes it easier to acquire larger and larger systems. And given the state of infrastructure needs and demand on those systems, I think the opportunity for larger acquisitions should increase. And now that's not saying someone's going to step in and buy Boston Water and Sewer or LADWP, but I think it levels down beneath that. There are 418 systems serving, water systems serving more than 100,000 people. So there are opportunities out there, maybe closer to the 50 to 75,000 person range. But that being said, so why don't we use this opportunity to jump into like their strategic positions or how do they differ? I mean, Isabel, you brought up Central States and then we talked about American. They clearly have different approaches. So how do we look at it or segment the competitive landscape?
Yeah, so Charlie and I worked on a recent analysis where we mapped the leading IOUs across two spectrums. And this is based on our historical M&A data. On one axis, we looked at the company's deal flow over the past 5 years. And on the other axis, we looked at the size of the systems they tend to target. And, this is an approximate placement we've made considering the portfolio of deals and just what we know about the companies and what the M&A is telling us. So when we position it this way, there's a few key observations. We have relatively inactive players, American States, San Gabriel, Global Water Resources, Artesian. And in our map, these are in the lower left quadrant. And they're occasionally making small deals. And then if we jump to the top right quadrant, these are where our front runners are. So American Water, Essential Utilities, high appetite, relatively large acquisitions targets. And we'll talk about this a little bit later, but they're gaining those large targets through increased use of fair market value legislation. And then lastly, there are the players that are in between, and they constitute the space that we're most interested in on the M&A front. These players are getting hungrier, more aggressive, but the size of the systems they target is less predictable because they're making both small and large acquisitions with a focus on really capitalizing on the opportunities available to grow and expand their businesses. So this is Central States, NW Natural, Southwest Water, Cal Water, Liberty, NextEra, San Jose, Eversource, and likely Veolia, depending on the approach that they take.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting. I think part of it is, you know, are this sort of like mid-tier group of players, it's more active one, but like you said, it's a bit more like size of acquisitions and location of acquisitions is a bit more inconsistent, or there's less of a pattern at this point, partly because they're relatively new to the game, right? So they're probably, I suspect they're being more opportunistic, right? They're sort of, you know, just kind of fighting for scraps, so to speak. But the reality, whereas Essential and American, they're so well established and they're doing tuck-in deals, you know, adjacent roll-ups of systems next to their existing state footprints, of which they're across many states, right? And so they also have the capital, they also have the brand. So obviously Essential and American are really strong in places like Pennsylvania. So that's like a key market for them. So it'll be interesting to see how these tier two players or mid-tier players, how it sort of unfolds in the next next couple of years. But with that, I mean, Isabel, you mentioned fair market value legislation. Charlie, why don't you give us some perspective on what that means? Because this is a question that quite honestly comes up a lot. And I think we've done some really good analysis on just the number of deals and where the fair market value is driving activity. So why don't you enlighten us?
Yeah. So yeah, the role of fair market value or FMV legislation and how that's influencing different IOU strategies is definitely a theme that we're tracking. And 2022 has been a busy year for FMV deals, but essentially fair market value policies are intended to enable sellers, and in most cases, that's municipalities, of water infrastructure assets, to enable them to divest these assets at higher prices, typically backed by multiple third-party appraisals, rather than the depreciated asset values, which are typically much lower. And the buyer benefits from a more receptive audience in this case, as well as the potential to pass off these costs to their respective rate bases. And so in the 36 or so states that do not have FMV legislation, municipal assets can only be acquired at book value, which, as I mentioned, is often depreciated far below the market value because of the age of these systems. The first FMV legislation was approved in California in 1997, and we've seen it spread to over a dozen states since then. It looks a little bit different in each state, but generally, as I mentioned, most states require, you know, two or three independent appraisals to establish that fair market value.
Are you asking us to do some heavy math here, meaning that there are 36 states that don't have FMV legislation? So are you telling me that 14 do have it?
That would be correct. I'm still waking up over here. The math part of my brain hasn't.
You just started from the opposite direction. I'm just like, oh, how many states have it?
Keeping everybody on their toes.
All right. So I just want to make that clear for anybody listening. So, all right. Sorry to interrupt and being, I think I'm supposed to say, in a public forum, sorry for being a smart aleck.
I'm just keeping everybody on their toes. But yeah, so as more states have adopted these policies, the benefits of FMV have definitely, you know, been questioned. There's been a lot of pushback, particularly by stakeholders and consumer advocate groups, particularly in Pennsylvania, where there's been a lot of FMV activity. But since 2015, we've tracked about, I think, exactly 90 FMV deals by 9 different companies. These deals totaled $1.4 billion with over 250,000 connections changing hands. 63% of FMD deals were for publicly owned systems. But putting that in context, just 12% of the total M&A deal flow that we've seen is typically for publicly owned systems.
And of these deals, you know, I think this is a big question. It seems to have really picked up or accelerated, right? And that's not only just, like you mentioned, Pennsylvania is a state where there's activity for good or bad, depending on your perspective. Where is most of the activity in a nutshell? Which states, if you're looking at FMV activity, which states is it happening in?
So yeah, correct me if I'm wrong as well, but I think primarily we're seeing it in Illinois, Missouri, Pennsylvania, as well as New Jersey, right?
Texas was another big one, but New American Water with the Egg Harbor deal, they I want to say that's the first fair market value deal in New Jersey. Don't quote me on that, but I know that was like a pretty long approval process, but it's through the New Jersey Water Infrastructure Protection Act, which is basically their fair market value legislation. There was also American Water that had a fair market value deal in Virginia this year, as well as one or two in Iowa, I want to say. So it's definitely spreading. And I think something Charlie and I were talking about the other day is that I think it took a bit of time because a lot of the fair market value legislation, I want to say, passed in 2018, 2019 through like 2021. And so I think there was a little bit of like a regulatory lag for each of the companies to figure out how to approach it in the different states, because it is different in every state. But I think this year, as Charlie mentioned, this is the most fair market value deals we've seen in any quarter. So I think IOUs are starting to get into the groove. And so, I mean, I think both Charlie and I are anticipating more fair market value deals coming down the pipeline. And I think especially, this goes back to like the very first thing we talked about, there's so many mounting pressures on utilities that, I mean, it could be appealing to get your fair market value for your system, especially if, you know, you need to build a PFAS treatment facility and you don't have the capital to do that, but you can get a higher price tag for your system. And then someone else is responsible for ensuring the compliance of your system. I think it could be, I think it could develop in that route too, especially with the changing regulatory landscape. But I guess, I mean, it's something that we're going to be watching to see if that's actually valid.
Yeah. I mean, I would agree. I think one, like just M&A, but also fair market value deals. I think, you know, deal activity begets more deal activity, right? So if a neighboring city or community, you know, either sells their system, the other, you know, their peer group, their neighbors start looking, oh, wow, such and such community just sold their water system for $50 million, let's say. And I think back to sort of this discussion, and the argument is, and it has unfolded partly through lobbying efforts by the IOUs, but also it is to benefit the utility or the cities themselves, the seller, right? And they should be getting, and I think they are getting higher values, you know, per connection in these deals. I think our data suggests or indicates that as well. So a fair market value deal sells at a higher price. Now, ultimately, you know, there are different provisions put into these deals, whether there's a freeze on rate hikes or limits them, governs them over a certain period of time. You know, communities will argue, hey, you know, you can't sell off, you know, the water system, the town or city's crown jewels. And there are different ways around that. I know in some cases, you know, the treatment system and plants have been sold, but the well fields or water supply has not been part of the deal. There are different ways to go about it. But the reality of it is, I think it should accelerate, not only in the states where we're seeing activity today, but even to others. And I think, and like I always said, these are regulated systems. There is a regulator involved. Someone is overseeing these deals. They are negotiated settlements. And sometimes there's pushback. And, you know, I know that in our upcoming quarterly, which I think is either in process of review right now, Charlie, you and I have talked a fair amount about this, but North Carolina, they have been pushing back on some deals, questioning the validity of whether it be fair market value usage or other parts of the deal. And some of that is also do the buyers actually have a demonstrated presence or experience in the state itself? So, no, I think it's really interesting and something we're looking at increasingly. But, you know, while we're talking deals, what are the big ones that we've seen, or maybe notable is a better way to put it?
Yeah. So to throw some more numbers at you and provide a little more context on what we're seeing this this year and this quarter, in total, we've tracked about 124 approvals, which includes a few early into Q4. This is down from the high total from 2021, but Q3 has been the busiest quarter of 2022 so far. And, you know, as we've been talking about, this is partially can be attributed to an influx of FMV approvals. But yeah, some of the notable deals that we've seen this quarter include the Southwest and Corix merger, which, you know, as we were talking about, is definitely going to shuffle the IOU leaderboard, at least in terms of total connections, once that deal closes. The combined entity will serve about 500,000 connections.
But also across, that's, I mean, I might add, and we've done research on this. I think, Charlie, you were a big part of this, and that is, but that's 500 or so thousand connections across 21, 22 states, right? So it's, you know, I hate to say inch deep, mile wide, but it's a lot of ground to cover. So I know that's going to take a better part of a year to unfold. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, once with new leadership, and I think Southwest leadership team is taking on a larger role in that deal. Correct me if I'm wrong, but whomever it is, I think the key part is there might be some cleaning up that happens as well, or at least some, it's a big, not to use a business buzzword, but like harmonization of the portfolio to kind of maybe clean things up a bit. And there could be divestments, no guarantee of that, but it's a possibility.
And if I could jump into, we've seen some of these dockets, or I guess applications for change of ownership or merger of ownership, they've started hitting the dockets in Q4. So by the, we'll be picking that up at the end of the year. So I'm excited to keep looking through those. I spent some time looking through the Illinois one the other day.
There's good, they're good nuggets in there without a doubt, stuff that has become public. So I like that. What else, Charlie?
Yeah. So, I think we maybe mentioned this one before, but just in case, the NW Natural deal with Far West, water and sewer assets in Arizona, that expands their customer base by about 75%, I think, in their first deal and entry into Arizona. And then Central States, I think they received approval on 4 medium-sized deals in Q3 and have definitely signaled a growing appetite for larger systems.
So, yeah, I think, I mean, that all makes sense to me. I think, you know, we've talked a lot about Central States, NW Natural is, that one is definitely a good one. The only one we're watching that. So with that being said, this is super helpful. When we've had this internal presentation, when you guys are sharing these insights of key trends, I thought it was fascinating. I think others thought it was fascinating as well. So you guys have done a good job of pulling it all together. Why don't I ask sort of a final question? I'll start with you as well. What are you working on now that you seem to have sort of cleared the decks a little bit, it seems. What are you up to?
I'm working on getting some of these slides for the analyst presentation that Charlie and I put together to more of our clients. And then going to jump into a little bit of work on the wastewater landscape and water reuse. So I'm excited.
Nice. What about you, Charlie?
Yeah, so I've started digging into the, you know, private companies' participation in the water sector in Latin America. I'm currently looking at public private partnerships in Mexico and trying to build out some of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a while since we dedicated sort of specific time to Mexico. We did it, we've got some older reports we put out several years ago. And just a conversation you and I had yesterday or day before, was like, how much has changed? You know, political winds have a lot to do with that, but also new policies in place. There's a lot of projects out there on the docket, or at least in planning. I don't know if docket is the right way to put it, but there's stuff happening in Mexico. So I look forward to seeing how that unfolds. And it seems like you're pretty far along. So I'm excited about that. All right, guys. Well, with that being said, thanks a million for, as Charlie said, getting up early. Early is all relative in my mind, but thanks again for taking the time and appreciate it. And we'll talk soon.
Thanks, Reese.
Thanks, Reese.
All right. See you, Charlie. See you, Isabel. All right. There you have it. So before we sign off, if you're in Boston, let us know. We can set up a meeting at our downtown office location. We've got people coming and going in and out of here. I had someone in the office yesterday talk about water specifically, not only in the US, but also Europe. So seize on the moment. We're 10 minutes from the train, 10 minutes from the airport, and a walk from most hotels in the Boston area. Please subscribe to the Future Water podcast and give us a review. It helps us help you. Send us a note to waterexperts@bluefieldresearch.com with any topic ideas that you would like us to discuss. We're doing this for you. Don't want to just talk to ourselves. I could talk about private water all day long, but not sure that's everything you want to hear from us. Lastly, tell a friend about it. That's how we spread the wealth and share the wealth. That is, if other people listen, it helps all of us. This podcast and these water industry insights have been brought to you by the one and only Bluefield Research. To learn more about us, visit us at bluefieldresearch.com. Be well, be safe, and take care.